All right, let's get rolling with Elise Glink. She is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. Hi, Elise.
Hey, John.
Well, I noticed that you were writing a little bit about Republic First Bank shutting its doors on Friday.
Yeah, it was the first bank failure of the year, and it's a small one. You know, this isn't, and I want to make sure everybody's not confused, First Republic Bank. That was one of last year's big failures. That's based in San Francisco, or I should say, was based in San Francisco. That bank had $209 billion in assets when it failed. First Republic Bank, or Republic First Bank, which is the one based in Philadelphia, had just $6 billion in assets. Not a small number, but compared to First Republic Bank, a small number, and about $4 billion in deposits. So it's a small bank, but that doesn't mean it doesn't inconvenience a whole lot of people. They were, however, bought. The assets were bought, and it has reopened, and everybody has full access to all of their deposits, so no concerns there.
I guess as long as your deposits don't exceed $250,000, right?
Correct. And that is one of the things. It didn't come up in the reporting on it, but there's been a lot of concern that the FDIC has been supporting deposits far larger than $250,000 per account or per Social Security number. And it wasn't reported whether or not they did that here, but it's a much smaller bank, and it's unlikely that if there were any deposits much larger than that it might have been for an occasional business here or there. My guess is it's probably been covered.
Do you know much about this? I mean, we talked a lot about that. There was a lot of alarm, confusion, and education when some of those banks were failing last year. And we haven't heard so much about that this year. I wonder what's the difference.
Well, it's been more stable this year. So last year, you know, we lost a couple of really big banks. Silicon Valley Bank, which was pretty much the bank for the tech company world based out in San Francisco. And then First Republic Bank, also based in San Francisco, also working in the tech industry. Those two banks together had almost, I want to say, like $500 billion in assets. And they had plenty of companies that had millions in those accounts. What was concerning to the FDIC and basically the entire federal government was the failure of those banks. If the companies lost the money that was in there, that was cash that they were using to pay salaries for, you know, thousands and thousands of workers. So there was some concern that if they didn't cover that money, that all those people would sort of instantly be out of jobs, and it would create quite a bit of havoc out in the West Coast. And so they covered all of that. This year we've gone now, actually since November of 2023 was the last time a bank failed. So we've gone a significant amount of time without a bank failure. I think the concern last year was that it was a contagion and it would spread.
Yeah, right.
We heard a lot about that. Didn't happen.
Yeah, boy, these are distant memories from a year ago, mind you, but that's you're right. Those are ringing some bells. Elise Glink's talking to us about first-time home buyers. Elise, how much money do I need to buy a house?
Well, first-time home buyers need to earn $120,000 to afford the average house, the average cost of a house for new data from Clever Real Estate. So I just want to be clear, because last week when we talked, I said average, and then I used the word mean, which is the midpoint. Averages, you take all of the salaries and then divide by the number of people. This is average, not mean, or median. So first-time buyers must earn $120,000 to afford the average cost of a house. And unfortunately, not everybody can do that, right? It's a lot more than what the typical household is earning every year.
The median U.S. income earner makes $74,000 a year?
The median U.S. income earner, $74,755. Right now, with interest rates where they are, which is over 7%, with 10% down, they could afford a house that costs $207,000 and change. Unfortunately, the typical cost of homes these days is a lot higher. So in Chicago, The median income is $82,900, but the median home price is $298,000. Right? So there's a mismatch going on right now between what people are earning and what homes cost, and the power of affordability really centers on interest rates, which is why every week when we talk about it, I keep hoping I'm going to have better news for you that interest rates are finally on their way down. But they don't seem to be, and it's really cutting into what first-time homebuyers can afford to spend.
Do you think there is some of the impatience in the market that first-time home buyers want a house nicer than their money can afford? That is, if interest rates are 7% and you're making $82,000 a year, then the house you can get is the house you can get. And I guess my point is, it's easy to look at this and go, wow, we have a real problem here. But we have a problem only as large as your patience. If how many of our listeners remember the very first house they bought? And granted, that was a long time ago when everything was cheaper and your income was less. But my point is, then buy a smaller house, and then in time you'll build up equity, and then you'll take that equity and get a bigger house. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So you trade up and you do the things that probably you and I both did, right? Because my first house was a co-op downtown, and after 5 years, we were able to trade up and buy a really small house that needed a lot of work. And then 5 years after that, we were able to finally fix the house up. And so, yeah, we were more patient. But what you have to remember, John, is when I first started writing about real estate 30 years ago, a long time ago, the average age of a first-time homebuyer was 26. Today, it's about 34.
Wow.
So people are already waiting. And so by the time you get to 34.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting point.
Everything's been pushed back. So the age that they're buying that first house, how long it takes them to get through college, the age that they are when they finally get married, the age that they are when they have their first kid. And so when you are pushing or time shifting, as I like to call it, the major milestones of your life. I guess if you're going to live to be 90, you're going to get there eventually. But it's really hard when you want to be an adult.
Is there an equation like, is it 2.5? Your income is the amount of house you should afford. So if you're making $80,000 a year, then 2.5 of that is 8160 plus 200,000, right?
Yeah. So when that all again goes back to interest rates and how much you have is for in cash for down payment. Now, we've known for 35 years that first-time buyers have a hard time scraping together cash for down payment. What's complicated that over 35 years is the amount of student loan debt that people have today versus what they had 30 years ago. Right, all of that has come to fruition and has complicated things. You and I have talked about how much cars cost. So the typical car today runs somewhere around $35,000 to $40,000.
Oh no, we asked Tom Appel about this last week. It's closer to $44,000.
All right, so
average,
it's gone up.
Average new vehicle price. I don't think he said car. I think he said vehicle. So throw in pickup trucks and SUVs, but $44,000.
So you've got a whole lot of things going on now that, have pushed people to stretch things out, and you start to understand why it's so tough to make it work on an income of, $74,000, $75,000 a year when you're trying to buy a house, feed a family, pay down your debt, pay down the car. There's a lot going on. So yes, you can buy a smaller house somewhere, but that's the other problem that we have right now, which is that there isn't just a lot of choice, not a lot of houses on the market at the lower end. So I would remind our listeners that every time you hear about the, average or even median price of a home going up, what it means is that a lot more homes that are more expensive are selling and fewer homes that are less expensive are selling. And so builders really aren't building as many of those entry-level homes, let's call them that, right? Your first house, whatever it's going to look like, condo, co-op, townhouse, or single family, they're just not building them because the cost of the land has gone up, the cost of the people to build it has gone up, and so the prices have to go up as well.
Although we had more lower-priced, good new properties, but that doesn't seem to be happening right now. Elise Glink, you can find her reporting and thinking at thinkglink.com. WGN, Wintrust Business Lunch. Are you watching? It's season 4 of Tech Rise. Sounds like one of those reality competition shows. It sort of is. Lucy Brennan is the director, founders team at P33. Lucy, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you?
Good. So tell me a little bit about this. First of all, what's TechRise?
Yeah, so TechRise is an initiative run by the organization P33, where we're working to inclusively accelerate the growth of innovation in tech in Chicago. And TechRise was an initiative founded by P33 and Verizon 3 years ago to support overlooked early stage entrepreneurs building here in Chicagoland. So, you know, just as you said, it really is. It's kind of like a Chicagoland Shark Tank that we stream live every Friday. Five founders come on stage and pitch for a chance to win $25,000 in non-dilutive grant funding.
How many episodes, how many Fridays do you do this?
We do it every Friday, 6 months out of the year. So we kicked off season four in April, and we will run this year through October. And then we kind of, you know, wrap up the year with a big in-person finale celebration every December.
What do the weekly winners get?
$25,000 in funding, as well as all founders who pitch with us go through about 2 months in advance of pitch coaching that we provide. We connect them with mentors who have experience within their industries as kind of pitch coaches as they prepare. And then founders, after coming on stage with us, whether or not they win or lose that $25,000, are then involved in kind of our wraparound programming and support as they continue to grow their businesses.
Can anybody apply to get in the pitch?
Really great question. So TechRise is specifically a really great fit for entrepreneurs who are at the earliest stages. So folks anywhere from idea stage who are, you know, kind of trying to get their idea up and off the ground to people who are ready to kind of raise their first round of institutional funding. We require businesses to be Chicagoland based, which we define pretty broadly, as well as founders from overlooked backgrounds specifically. And our application is live, active, always rolling. www.techrise.co is where you can find it. And again, we accept founders kind of based on whatever a week's given theme is throughout the year. So I would encourage anybody interested to apply as soon as possible.
I'll talk to you about those themes in a minute, but is it conceivable then that someone will have no more than an outline, a sketch of an idea, and they need money to write the code, or somebody else might actually have a product that's already being sold online? Is it that range of pitches?
Yeah, really, really great clarification. And yes, so we will, you know, for any kind of given week, try to ensure that the founders pitching together are within a relatively similar stage of their business. But yes, very much from idea stage to, as you said, businesses that already kind of do have a product in market. But, you know, one of the focuses of TechRise is to really kind of close the gap in friends and family funding that founders from overlooked backgrounds are often confronted by. You know, there are many kind of historical barriers to generational wealth building, which therefore mean that sometimes that kind of non-dilutive, no strings attached money that you need to get an idea up and off the ground so that you can start generating revenue and continuing to scale it, that's the problem that we're trying to address with TechRise.
Give us a couple of examples, Lucy, of kinds of businesses that have pitched or maybe won one of the week's rounds.
Yeah, really great question. So again, I would encourage folks to tune into our TechRise because there are hundreds of founders and I can't describe all of their businesses. But one that I actually recently got an email update, had a pretty exciting quarter recently that we've supported since season one, is an event management and online ticketing platform called Event Noir. And we are actually using Event Noir as an organization to host all of our events for this summer's Tech Chicago
Wow.
Week.
Well, good. That's putting your money where your mouth is or your organizational support. Well, listen, that would strike me as a real David and Goliath scenario, if it is what I think it is, because I would imagine the entry into that marketplace is pretty formidable right now.
Very much so. And so to see all of the traction that they've gained over the past 3 years is really exciting.
Wow, great. Okay, so people sign up. What are some of the themes? Like, are you asking them are you looking for businesses which are pitching a certain kind of business or employing a certain type of people?
Yeah, really great question. And there's a really wide range there as well. So, you know, one area or one way that we select the themes for a given competition are based on whoever the sponsors are that are contributing to that week's prize. And so across a variety of industries, upcoming this Friday, we have a Future of Work pitch competition scheduled. And then over the next month, we have a Fem and Fam Tech competition, an education one. We're hosting a food tech competition during this week's Chicago Venture Summit. But I'm also really excited for some of our plans for this fall. We're hosting two kind of new pilot series, one of which is a neighborhood-based competition. And so we're really working to ensure that TechRise very intentionally supports communities on the south and west sides of the city as well. So this fall, we're going to host competitions in North Lawndale, Englewood, Greater Grand Crossing, Little Village, and Humboldt Park. And we're also expanding into working with more student entrepreneurs by hosting competitions in partnership with some of our local universities to encourage, you know, local student entrepreneurship as well.
We're talking to Lucy Brennan, the director and founder, the director of Founders Team. What is Founders Team? What does that mean, Lucy, when I'm making your introduction so, here?
Thank you. That's the team at P33 that manages TechRise. And then we since have seen a lot of success in TechRise. We've developed programming for founders as they continue to press.
I see. After somebody wins $25,000, what if they just go buy a new car or a used car? Do you monitor the use of the funds?
We don't monitor the direct use of the funds. However, we do monitor follow-on funding by our founders. And based on those numbers, we are seeing that they're, you know, kind of using the funds from TechRise very, very strategically. So far, we've deployed nearly $2.5 million of TechRise awards. But since, those founders have gone on to raise over $110 million in follow-on funding.
What's a success story? Do you have one that you champion as an example of how, if we just give them that first leg up, they go?
Yeah, so I have countless, but actually one bigger success metric that I'll point to is not only that $110 million in follow-on raise, but founders who have pitched with us have also created over 975 new jobs over the past 3 years. And, you know, recognizing that these are founders building across neighborhoods throughout the entire city, that is just kind of further catalyzing economic development across our city as a whole.
Well, let's wrap this up. What do you want our listeners to do or know then, Lucy? Are you looking for either funding or are you looking for people to watch the stream? What's the pitch?
Phenomenal question. And I will say all of the above. Funding is always phenomenal. But yeah, if nothing else, I would really encourage folks to start to tune into TechRise Fridays at noon. You can watch it live during your lunch hour. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Even that will provide us additional funding, which is incredibly communicated. And then if you go to the TechRise website, you can join the community, volunteer to work with our entrepreneurs. And of course, if you're building a business, please do apply.
Okay. So techrise.co and p33chicago.com are two of the websites to write down. Techrise.co and p33chicago.com. Sound good?
Great. That is perfect. Thank you so much.
Lucy Brennan, thank you. How about that? That's fascinating. Over a couple $1 million given out, $25,000 a week for 6 months of the year. Did you know? Let's get you more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. University of Chicago Medicine's new facility in Crown Point opens today. It's UChicago's first freestanding facility in Indiana and its largest off-site location, located near I-65 and 109th Avenue. UChicago Medicine Crown Point will offer advanced specialty care, including cancer, heart, obstetrics, and gynecology. The facility will also offer pediatric care from Comer Children's Hospital experts. It'll employ about 200 clinical and non-clinical staff and is expected to accommodate 110,000 patient visits each year. American Airlines is the latest carrier to cut back service in Chicago. It's just one flight so far and comes as airlines adjust operations because Boeing has been unable to deliver new aircraft. American has been waiting on new 787 Dreamliners, so the airline's having to curtail some international operations that those planes would have served. American will suspend its Chicago O'Hare to Paris service on September 3rd and won't resume that service until summer 2025. It's cutting flights and suspending service at other airports as well. I'm Steve Britanich, and that's your WinTrust Business Minute.
Here's Steve Alexander's business of food.
Yeah, thank you. And last week's abrupt closure of Foxtrot and Dom's left a lot of people sad, angry, and devastated, especially employees with no jobs and small mom-and-pop vendors who don't know if they'll be paid tens of thousands of dollars they're owed or if they'll get their product back. But there seems to remain a surprising amount of goodwill toward Foxtrot, and one of those vendors left holding the bag poses this question.
Does Foxtrot deserve a celebration of life or a crucifixion?
Yeah, more from him after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. On the phone is one of the many vendors who isn't sure whether he'll be paid by Foxtrot or get his products back.
Jordan Tepper, co-founder of Post Cocktails and Apolog Liqueurs.
And he's not as angry as much as he is grateful that the stores carried his liqueurs and pre-mixed cocktails.
They brought credibility, just the ability to drive sales through their many locations. And as they grew, our business grew, was meaningful.
He does say it was interesting and a little curious watching Foxtrot burn through $180 million in investor capital.
And you could never quite figure out how they pulled it off. We know the answer. They were living on borrowed time, and they had overextended themselves.
And amid the wreckage?
Folks will learn a lot from what Foxtrot did well and from where it struggled. And better businesses will emerge.
And for the hundreds of people who were employed at Foxtrot and Dom's?
Please feel free to send them my way. I know from talking with business owners, there's plenty of businesses looking for great talent, especially within the hospitality and operations experience folks.
His name is Jordan Tepper, and you can find him on LinkedIn. He says not having Foxtrot and Dom's as retailers will hurt, but Host Cocktails, and Host is spelled H-O-S-T-E, is continuing to grow.
And we're going to be coming out with some new products this summer, and then towards the end of the summer, opening up a facility in Pilsen.
And a final thought about last week's abrupt closing?
It stings in the moment, for sure. But I think in some way, shape, or form, the Foxtrot's impact will outlast it.
Jordan Tepper of Host Cocktails and Apolog Liqueurs. He is choosing to celebrate rather than crucify. On the food calendar, it's National Shrimp Scampi Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Ray Stout joins us, Executive Director for the Illinois Craft Brewers Guild. Hey, Ray, when is the big craft beer week start in Chicago?
Illinois Craft Beer Week kicks off May 3rd, and it's the most wonderful time of the year.
What do you know? That's so convenient. That's this Friday then, right?
Absolutely. We're kicking off this Friday with one of our signature festivals called Beer Under Glass at Union Station.
What is that? Why do you call it Beer Under Glass?
So in the Great Hall of Union Station, it's actually you're under 200 feet of, a beautiful glass ceiling. And, you know, this is a one-of-a-kind tasting event where well over 100 breweries from across the state are coming to showcase their products for attendees.
I've been, that's the train station I used for years, and I've been to events there, and it really is a great venue.
It's absolutely beautiful. You know, it really ties in the, you know, historic structures and architecture that Chicago is so well known for, with literally the most accessible place in the state to have a beer festival.
Why do you say that? Oh, because it's at the station, you mean, like that?
Yeah, without a doubt. Metro, CTA, car, there's a million different ways to get there.
Yeah, and you can catch a ride or jump on the train to go home, and you don't even have to worry about your commute, right?
That's exactly right. That's one of the big purposes there.
So 200?
Over 100 breweries, as well as about 10 distilleries for the first time ever, and now pouring well over 200 different types of beer for you to sample.
So what do? Maybe get a wristband, walk around, and with a little glass, just see what they got, that sort of thing?
That's exactly right. So you could purchase tickets on illinoisbeer.org, and, you know, once you get in, you'll get wristbanded, and you could take your own adventure around the state and visit breweries that will take you 4 hours to drive to.
I know it has been all about the IPAs. Is that still the focus, or what's going on in the trade these days?
You know, I would say IPAs are still making up a majority of the craft beer sold in the United States as well as Illinois, but you know, some of these lager beers and these lighter beers are actually coming to the forefront. And we actually, the state of Illinois just won 9 medals at the World Beer Cup last week. And so it's further proof that we're making some of the best beer in the world right here in the state.
What are some of the labels that I'll recognize that you're talking about, Ray?
Old Irving Brewing in Chicago won a gold medal for their Beezer beer. They will be at Beer Under Glass. Brother Chimp Brewing in North Aurora won a gold medal for their Vienna Lager style beer. They'll be at Beer Under Glass. And you know, Golden Fox Brewing in Decatur won a gold medal. And you know, just to see these small regional breweries doing so well on a national scope, it's amazing.
Well, it's interesting because we certainly recognize some of the trademark brands of Chicago's beer industry, but it's nice to see maybe Aurora or Decatur or some of those outlying areas, huh?
You know, it's exactly right. You know, we are an industry made up of small independent businesses. And yes, there's some larger brand names that are part of our organization. But, you know, it's these small businesses that have popped up around the state that, you know, entire downtowns have come up around are my favorite stories.
Well, I guess some of those moderately big ones these days were little ones once upon a time, right?
Without a doubt. And, you know, if it wasn't for the good work of the Illinois Craft Brewers Guild to help modernize liquor law in the state, you know, there wouldn't be a revolution and there wouldn't be a Half Acre. And so, you know, you're right. They started small, but now they're there. And it's really great to see this industry continuing to grow and thrive.
All right, Ray. Well, we'll see you downtown Friday. Should I buy my tickets in advance now online? Can I buy them at the door?
You could buy your tickets in advance at illinoisbeer.org, or you could buy them day of at the door.
Okay. Ray Stout, Executive Director for the Illinois Craft Brewers Guild. Have a great Friday night.
Hey, see you there.